John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And good morning on this Monday, on an interesting week coming up. You always know it's going to be so busy because it's going to be cut down week in the National Football League. Lots of stuff going on there, lots of baseball. I'm coming back from the Minnesota game, which was on Friday, and then, of course, I had to make a little stop over in Fort Lauderdale for a speaking thing, a little fantasy convention thing. So now flying back, I'm in Houston right now. Houston, hello, as we try to get back tonight to Seattle. So in the meantime, we got the five biggest stories of the day. The top five is brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
I thought it looked pretty clean. You know, I think that we felt the line of scrimmage in all three games. You know, we haven't had a chance to really dig in. I think we had 26 or something plays with the first group. You know, so it's not barely a half. You know, but it felt like we had Smith to us. The running backs were hitting line of scrimmage pretty good. Mike hit as well as Chris. Both those guys averaged about 5 yards a carry. So it feels good. It feels like we're going in the right direction.
Yeah, and you know, and everybody kind of looked negatively. It was a 21-20 loss to the Minnesota Vikings. I think it was a very favorable game. Certainly there's things to work on. They've got to get better with their third down defense. You know, I think they did a better job stopping the run, but they still need to clean that up a little bit. But the biggest thing is that they were able to match up against a Viking team. And, of course, that seems like a little silly to bring that up. But the Vikings are one of the most talented teams in football. You know, they got 7 Pro Bowlers on defense. They got Pro Bowlers on offense. They got Kirk Cousins, and you know what you saw was that the tackling, even though there was some misses, there was some good crisp tackling. And I think the biggest thing is the advancement in the offense, because with Russell Wilson getting behind a running game, the offensive line blocked well. I think you can see everything is sorting out at the wide receiver position, and there's pass catchers there. I think it looks very encouraging. And again, where I say that you can see where it's sorting out, I think we now know who the 6 wide receivers are going to be. I mean, it's going to be certainly the veterans. You've got Doug Baldwin, you got Tyler Lockett, and you got Brandon Marshall. And then you have the 3 young guys who have now moved into position to make the team. And I think it's David Moore. I mean, not only does he make a big catch every game, but he's now shown the ability, if necessary, he can be a return guy. So I think that's encouraging. I mean, Jerron Brown looks solid. I mean, big, tall receiver who can catch and do things. And both that is on special teams. You know, that helps out. And then the one that now steps up to become the 6th receiver is Marcus Johnson. Marcus Johnson's also available to help out on special teams, and if you're going to be receivers 4, 5, and 6, you've got to be able to play special teams. And so that means bad things for Amara Darbo. Stringfellow is, of course, now probably going to have to make the practice squad and everything else, but I think they will keep 6 wide receivers. But that clearly, I think, sorted itself out over the course of the last couple weeks. So you look at that group from 4 to 6. They got size, they've got speed, they got pass catching ability, they got leaping ability, they got athletic ability. And so I think that that takes over. Then, of course, the other one that was developing was the fact that you can see the right tackle now. You can see where it's headed, because it was suddenly uncertain. You know, it got a better game out of Jermaine Ifedi. Was it perfect? No, but I think it was just clearly the best of the 3 games. And so that solidifies him as a starter. And then George Fant, who will be joining us a little bit later, made an amazing transition from left tackle to right tackle in 1 week. And I watched, particularly because, you know, being on the Viking sidelines, when they were moving down the field for 1 quarter, I watched every block that he made, and he was solid. I think, you know, he may have had 2 blocks that didn't go well. But when you think of the number of plays he was out there, that is, I think, very encouraging. And so now there is a challenger to the right tackle position, and that's George Fant. But again, they don't have to make that move now. If anything goes down with Ifedi, then I think you can see Fant taking over that position. Chris Carson continues to run well. I think you can see that Eric Walden, in his first debut with 2 sacks at the latter part of the game, may offer a little bit of pass rush help. That's encouraging. Jerron Reed played a good game.
Number
a lot of positive
2.
Things I
well,
ha- didn't happen. Was it perfect? No.
Game Friday night. The Seattle Times has learned that he is going to have a procedure on his knee after canceling an autograph session at Mill Creek Sports this weekend. The Seahawks did also have some roster moves this weekend, releasing wide receiver Tanner McAvoy and signing fullback Daniel Mark.
Okay, so a couple updates as far as injuries and roster moves. So they added a 245-pound fullback from Atlanta in Daniel Marks. So he's now going to see if he's going to compete against Trey Madden. You know, do they want the bigger type of blocking fullback? Do they want Madden, who can do a little bit in the pass game along with be on special teams? I guess so much of it's going to depend on Daniel Marks and what kind of special teams player he is. Tanner McAvoy was inevitably going to be, you know, cut from the team because, again, you know, I think we already know the six wide receivers. So that's sorting itself out, and I'm sure there's going to be a few more roster moves made here in the next couple of days because that's the one thing that I think John Snyder is doing, kind of in the vein of what he did back in 2010, just bring guys in, take a look at them, see if they can, you know, bring them back if necessary, and that's one thing that they did. You know, Marks is an undrafted rookie out of Stanford. He had been with Atlanta, waived a couple weeks ago, and now he's on this roster, and so I know that they'd like to have a big fullback. I think they also like Trey Madden, so that has to sort itself out. Then, of course, in the injury front, they dodged a bullet with a couple. I mean, Tedrick Thompson took a shot to the ribs. He came back and played. Mike Davis suffered an ankle injury, and he came back and played. So they're okay there. And then the knee issue that K.J. Wright has, you know, they had to cancel an autograph session that he had over the weekend. And so he gets the Regenikine blood spinning thing. He becomes the sixth Seahawk to do that. The other four Seahawks who did that for their knee did not miss a game. Wright had that last year. He missed one game, but that was due to a concussion. So that's the injury front. So it looks like that all should be in a good state. So they came out of the last two games, with the exception of, you know, one injury, and that's J.D. McKissic, pretty clean.
Number three.
Diaz trying to save another one-run game. Here's the pitch to Marte. Swing and a lift out to the gap in left center field. Span over. Haniger over as well. Mitch leaps, and he makes the catch on the warning track to end the ball game. And the Mariners escape the desert in game two in the 10th inning. Scott Servais, you better get cozy up to that barber's chair. Eddie's Clippers are coming for you. His 50th save of the season. No Mariners closer has ever reached this milestone. On August the 25th of 2018, Edwin Diaz notches his 50th save of the season, and it nails down a Mariners 4-3 win against the Diamondbacks.
And we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Well, the Mariners had a good series in Arizona. They go to a good Arizona team, a division-leading team, and they win two out of three, including the first two. And that's the good news. The good news is that Edwin Diaz gets his 50th save, and that means that Scott Servais now has to get a haircut like Edwin Diaz. And that's amazing to think. 50 saves. Here it is, right heading toward the end of August. That is absolutely amazing. And that tomorrow is going to be the haircut day, so we'll see how that's going to look tomorrow night. But the bad news, even though the Mariners won two out of three against the Diamondbacks, the Astros, the A's, and the Yankees all swept their series, and so the Mariners lose ground. They are now five games behind the A's for the second wild card, and so that's a little bit scary. Now the Yankees are starting to spin back a little bit. You know, now they've spin back and get that sweep, so they're trying to see if they can catch up a little bit to the Boston Red Sox. But overall, it was a good series. And again, I think the pitching stepped up at the right time. Good pitching by Erasmo Ramirez. Gets six innings and three runs. Wade LeBlanc gave up one run in six innings on Saturday. Six innings for Mike Leake. He gave up five runs. Three came in the third inning, and that was a three-run homer. So that was at least that it. So Mariners have a day off today, and they'll come back and take on the San Diego Padres tomorrow. Felix Hernandez on the mound. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number four.
Getting out there with the ones, obviously it's moving really fast. And to see that speed, it was eye-opening. You know, they have a really good defense, and they came out and they brought it.
And so lots of news in the National Football League, and we'll get into that. First off, some bad news out of Jacksonville. Marquise Lee digged up that low hit on the knee, and one that was really, I mean, and this has been predicted because everybody's now trying to adjust and not get the helmet hit, and people thought going, it's going to go for the knee. Well, they went for the knee. It was a safety for the Atlanta Falcons. He had to be carted off. Now he's going to require season-ending surgery. We don't know exactly which ligament it is, but his season is done. That's bad news for Jacksonville because now they're technically down three wide receivers from last year. Allen Robinson ended up going to Chicago. They cut Allen Hurns, and so they're starving for wide receivers. So are the New England Patriots. Eric Decker retired. And so now they're basically down to three experienced wide receivers, and they're almost taking the tact that unless they bring in somebody, and they're not bringing in Dez Bryant, they may have to go into the season using running backs to catch passes. That's not necessarily good because they're very thin right now at that position. But Decker, of course, now officially retired. I mean, he was a mess. I mean, he was dropping just about everything, not getting anything done. I know today you got the National NFL Players Association. I know that Russell Okungun's involved, probably Richard Sherman. They're going to try to meet on the phone on a conference call to talk more about what's going to happen with the national anthem. So we'll see if anything progresses in that regard. And so that's going to take place today, trying to figure out what's going to happen, but nobody knows. And then yesterday, if you're wondering if Josh Allen is ready to be a starting quarterback, I think you got the answer. He's not. Behind a bad offensive line, Allen was sacked five times, got a little bit of a concussion at the end before the end of the half, had to be at least escorted off the field, and it was pretty bad. Five sacks. He admitted he held on to the ball too long. I think they may have to go with Nathan Peterman at quarterback.
Number five.
Brianna, what did that mean yesterday? Is you were awarded that trophy as a WNBA MVP. What did you feel as that hardware came your way?
Honestly, it was just an amazing honor. And I think, yesterday to top everything off with the win, it just made it a great day through and through. To win MVP just goes to show all the hard work that I put in this offseason and, all the work that we've done together as a team.
So that's what a great weekend. Breonna Stewart for the Storm ends up getting the WNBP MVP, and the Storm get the victory over Phoenix, the Mercury, 91-87. They led by as much as 16 points in the third quarter, and Mercury came back to make it a game at the end, four-point game, but they start the playoffs right now with the victory. Breonna Stewart ends up getting 28 points, seven rebounds, and so the Storm comes out. They're looking pretty good right now. Game two is going to be Tuesday night in Seattle, and So go see them because, again, they're fun to watch and it looks like a great team. Hey, you can listen to my show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Well, coming up next, we're going to go under further review and review what happened on Friday night, project what might be happening this week. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
And we go into further review every day, and what we do is we kind of break down what's going on. And, of course, I know it was Friday, but lots went on in the Seahawks game going against the Minnesota Vikings, a 21-20 loss for the game. Where they actually, the first team ended up winning. It was a 13-6 victory for the first team going against a very talented Viking first team. And so I thought that was encouraging. And so I know that we'll kind of break down and get into some interviews with some of the people who made a big part of the game the other day. So, but I know earlier today on Brock and Salk, Brock was talking about the best player that he's seen so far this season.
Speaking of single best, who's been the single best football player so far this preseason for the Seahawks through three games?
It's been Justin Coleman. Michael Dixon has gotten a lot of the headlines, rightfully so. His numbers are staggering. We'll hit more of that in takeaways. Russell Wilson has obviously been dominant at the quarterback position. But just overall, just as a football player, if you look at the, 30, 40 plays, Justin Coleman has been awesome. He's been awesome in coverage. He's been awesome off the edge blitzing. He's been awesome against the run game. And we were down on the field beforehand, and I was chatting with Paul Allen. Not the Seahawks owner, Paul Allen, but the play-by-play man of the Minnesota Vikings. And he looked over there at Justin Coleman. He's like, man, that guy was here. He's an undrafted rookie free agent. They cut him. He starts in the Super Bowl for the New England Patriots, and then the Patriots get rid of him. Like, to think a couple organizations could be that wrong. But that is, some of the cruelty of the NFL game as well.
Yeah, kind of interesting, and I tend to agree that he has been very impressive, and we're fortunate that Brock brings this up because he'll be on the show tomorrow. And what you like, and I know that I think it's like the second mistake that Bill Belichick made last year. Clearly the first one was not playing Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl. That was not right because it didn't have enough cornerbacks. But when you think about here it was right before the start of last season, and they traded and got Coleman for a seventh-round pick, and he's been establishing himself as one of the best slot guys as far as coverage in football. He was, I think, Pro Football Focus in the top six for that category last year. And then you look and you see what he's doing as far as the blitz. I know he had two sacks last year coming off the corner in a blitz, and he had back-to-back plays almost where he was able to get pressure on the quarterback. And so that's in the mix. So not only is he a great coverage guy from the slot, and very, you can get the footwork, he's got everything else, but he's also a playmaker. And with Ken Norton wanting to blitz more, I think that you can see that's of great value. I know last week Trey Flowers was able to break in and get a real good blitz coming off the corner. So there's corner blitzes, linebacker blitzes, but Justin Coleman has been very impressive. And so when you think about just how cheaply they were able to pick him up and how he came back out here and immediately established himself as the slot guy, so that has helped that transition in the secondary. Now it's a matter of figuring out who's going to be the third cornerback. You know, of course, the one that's going to be on the outside. Is it going to be Dante Johnson? Is it going to be Byron Maxwell? Is it going to be Trey Flowers? That has to be figured out. But Coleman turns out to be really a steal in what they're able to get and get out here in his production. You know, he's in the last year of his contract, and I would have to think he's playing himself into a pretty nice deal as a slot guy, but also a playmaker. On the other side, I think you saw that on offense, Jermaine Ifedi had his best of three games. And I think he solidifies himself for now. And I say that for now because they really didn't have anybody to compete against him and challenge him for the job. Isaiah Battle was trying to battle in there, but what ends up happening is that he comes back and gets his knee hurt, and so he comes back and they put him on the left side. They tried Jamarco Jones, and Jamarco ends up getting that real bad ankle injury that's going to put him on the injured reserve list. But then George Fant came back and made an amazing transition, and George is going to be joining us here coming up on the show talking about how he made the move to right tackle, and he really did very well. We'll get the review from Pete Carroll after practice today, but here's what Brock Huard had to say about Jermaine Ifedi.
Well, not as a Mariner. His
line is outright killing the team. I got to say, what he's done, I don't know whether they're going to be as good to know. And
when Ingram got thrown around, and I will say this, Jermaine Ifedi has not played a better half of football through at least my lens than what I saw in Minnesota Friday night. He was physically dominant. He wanted to hit people in the run game. He short set a bunch. He got his hands on Robinson, the veteran defensive end, who thought he got held a couple different times, which is good. That means that Jermaine Ifedi was in place and was manhandling and mauling him. He had one of his higher protection grades, an excellent run game grade. He played really well, and that's what competition is supposed to do. And you talk about development, that's development. Competition is supposed to help develop your players. Jermaine had a really good game, and he needed to.
And I agree, because had he slipped, I think that now, the way that George Fant played, Fant could be closer to the starting job. And what you might see now is that if Fant continues to develop, and I think that it's pretty well set now, particularly knowing that game four is going to be resting most of the starters, that the way that Ifedi finished now puts him in a position to start. But if he gets the penalties, the mistakes, has some trouble, then I think they can maybe try Fant. But in the meantime, the longer Ifedi can stay as the starter, the more Fant has a time to make the adjustment from left to right. And again, Fant did a great job. I think a sensational job in the way that he blocked. And I was kind of amazed. And I was glad that he was at the right tackle position in a quarter that I was able to watch very closely from the sidelines, just about every block that he made. And he made very few mistakes. I think you can see his athletic ability as a former basketball player helped him out. We'll get the story from him coming up in a little bit here, as he'll talk about how he played and what he was able to do. Yeah, he'll be joining us when we go behind the lines at 10:45. So that was good. And also David Moore. Not only is he making big catches, but he displayed something that I don't know if anybody anticipated. He can return. He had a punt return that he was able to take back for a touchdown. Unfortunately, it was called back on a penalty. But the great thing is, you can't take away the tape. The tape is still there. He was able to grab the ball, go right up the middle of the field, and then get that touchdown. And again, it wasn't like the block was so illegal that he got the touchdown because of that one block. No, he got the touchdown, even though, again, it didn't count, because of the way that he was able to return. So you add that into the mix. And certainly, Brock Huard had great things to say about David Moore.
I think why that punt return touchdown seals his fate in a very positive way is that showed his physical want-to. He had a punt earlier he could have fielded, right? He's not the natural punt returner, but with McKissick's injury and he's being out, Tyler Lockett held out, it's okay, let's give other guys opportunity. He had one he could have maybe ran up and fielded, got tackled, ran out of bounds, saved 15 yards or so, and I was like, oh man, that's one with more experience that he could save you 15 or 20 yards of real estate. Well, that last one he catches, that punt return that got called back, and you've got to have some guts and some stones to take it right up the middle. Right? He made one little cut, and he went right down, just parted the ways on that punt return. Didn't run out, you know, to the outside, and didn't try to just use speed. Nope. Said, I am willing right here, and I may get whacked. I may have something coming from my blind side that I can't see or in my peripheral, but I'm willing to take this sucker full speed, and he housed it. And, I think that shows a just kind of a level of just toughness and resolve and want to on top of its speed and size. I think David Moore makes this roster.
And I guess that's the interesting part because, I mean, obviously defense has been one of the keys to the success of this team since Pete Carroll has taken over. They've built the fact that they ended up having as many as 7 and 8 Pro Bowlers on the defensive side. But I think you see the story this year is on offense. Offense in the sense that now they've got four new receivers that they now have that I think add speed, athleticism, height, all those different things to the offense. Now you can see that they're solidifying some things with the block on the offensive line. And if Fetty can at least keep his starting job, Russell Wilson likes the continuity that's there for the offensive line, and that'll help with the run game. It certainly helped with the pass game. Russell Wilson said that he had all time and all day to be able to throw. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we'll get the update on what's going on the Mariners with Shannon Dreyer. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And joining us in the Venue Kings hotline is Shannon Dreyer. And so, Shannon, I guess, the Mariners did their part. They were able to get 2 out of 3 wins, including the first 2 wins, and a very good Arizona team. That was encouraging. But then the strange part is, and this is how wild this wild card race, this playoff race is, the Yankees sweep, the Astros sweep, and the A's sweep. So in the end, the Mariners lose 1 game and are now 5 games out of the wild card. I mean, how crazy is this wild card race?
Well, it just shows you what the competition is right now. And the Mariners, where it was about trying to win series for a long time, didn't win enough. And now they need to start winning. It's funny, you talk to them in the clubhouse, and they themselves, players, manager, everybody is saying, we need to pretty much win every game right now. And so while it was a series win, I think it was disappointing that they lost that game on Sunday. And when you look at what these teams that are in this wild card race and the division leading race are doing right now, it's been remarkable what we've seen in the second half. You take a look, Oakland comes to mind. They are 24-10 in the second half. Yankees 21-14 in the second half. Then you look back at the two teams that have stumbled in the second half. One of them is the Houston Astros. They're just 16-15, but the Mariners at 16-18. Right now, they're in a position where they've got to do extras. So, they use the cushion that they had. They use that 11-game cushion that they had when the A's passed by them, and now they need to go on some kind of run right now. And if you talk about crazy wild card chase, you can throw Tampa in there right now too. They're 21-14 in the second half, doing things strangely with the pitching, but they're right there. It's going to be hard for them. They're 4 behind the Mariners right now, but they've made up significant ground as well. So the teams that are in it right now are playing very good baseball.
And I guess that shouldn't be surprising because, I mean, again, it's such a narrow list of teams that have been in the playoff hunt. Has all the rest of the team either, trying to tear it down, build it back up, or really just kind of wait till next year. I mean, again, there's great drama if you're here in Seattle, you're in Oakland, and that are in the race. But unfortunately, most of the other places in the American League, they're out and out, down and out. Their fans are down and out, and that's not good news as far as baseball in those cities.
Well, that's the way it was going to go this year. We saw that, you know, you saw that going into the season. You saw that with a lack of moves that were made by a lot of teams in the off season. A lot of teams gearing toward that better free agent class that's coming up at the end of this year. And then you get into the season and see what happens. There were teams that were definitely out of it at the beginning, just kind of throwing the season a little bit in that regard, just throwing everything towards 2019. Then there were teams that went into the season saying, oh, we'll see what happens in the first couple of months and go from there. And then you had that smaller tier of teams that appeared to definitely be going for it from start to finish. And when you look at the teams that are in it right now and performing at the level that they're at, they kind of did it differently in getting to where they were at. You take a look at teams like New York and Boston. They were supposed to be there all along. They've spent up to the salary cap and have made some in-season moves, too, to help themselves as well. Then you look at teams like Tampa and Oakland, and Tampa looked like they were in full sell. And not only were they in full sell, but they went ahead and experimented with what they had wanted to try with the opener situation. Now, some of that was out of necessity because they just didn't have enough starters to have a five-man rotation. But also it was an opportunity because they were like, hey, we're not in this right now. Let's go ahead and try it out. And lo and behold, their pitching has been very good ever since they went to that. So that's interesting to see. Then you've got the Oakland A's, who a lot of people felt, myself included, that they were building toward 2019, and perhaps they arrived sooner than expected. And I had kind of a question going into the deadline because of the history that they had and because they are the lowest spending team in baseball. And my question was, even though they were kind of trending in the right direction, heading towards that trade deadline, I didn't think it was out of the question that they might still sell and still aim everything towards 2019. They, of course, did not do that. They added to the bullpen and have taken off, though they were already on their way at that point, but that absolutely has helped push them forward as well. They got the bad news yesterday that they're going to be without Sean Manaea at least for 10 days. Still haven't got a clear picture on what is going on with that shoulder injury. He's got impingement right now, but was scheduled for an MRI this morning. But just really interesting to see, you know, how the teams that are here now at the end got there, where they were at the beginning, the decisions they made at the trade deadline, and where they are right now.
Yeah, speaking of pitching, it turned into a pretty good weekend as far as the six innings that are really needed from the start of pitching. Erasmo Ramirez, the six innings. It was six innings for Wade LeBlanc. May not as good six innings for Mike Lee, but at least they got the six innings, which in two games of win.
Yeah, I think that's something, if you're looking for something very encouraging over the last few days, over the last week from this Mariners team, I think it is that pitching. And there were big question marks. And now they're in a situation where if they want, it would appear that they can go with a six-man rotation for a little while to take pressure off of somebody like a Marco Gonzalez. So I think that, you know, you look at Mike Lake, he had a rough outing yesterday, but that was the result of one inning. He had kind of a different work week because he was coming off of that injury, and I'm really not too worried about him. I don't really see fatigue from him. He's been their most dependable starter for the last month and a half. I'd be surprised if we didn't see him get more back on track his next outing. Wade LeBlanc, that was a relief to see what he did in Arizona, because he was one of those question mark guys. As much as I believe that he is a guy that, because he's not such a velocity guy, you don't have to worry about him with the innings as much. The innings are so much, it's an extreme with him right now where he's at. He was a reliever who is now starting, but to see what we saw from him on Friday, I think that was important. We were fully expecting to see James Paxton in Oakland, and if he's back healthy, even if they go to a six-man rotation, I would believe they would still keep him on every 5 days and utilize him as much as possible. Felix, still a wild card, but giving you the innings and giving you a decent performance his last couple of times out. And Erasmo's doing exactly what we saw from him last year. And when he came over from the Rays, he had a couple of innings where it was kind of an adjustment. He had pitched mostly out of the bullpen that year, and then he took off. He gave you a lot of quality starts. He gave you a lot of innings. He's showing he can do that right now. So I think that was a very encouraging sign when there were a lot of question marks with this group.
No question. And, of course, one guy that really needed to have a big hit was Kyle Seager, and he got a big one that really helped out.
He did, and, you know, he's just to a place where I think you're taking what you can get from him. And it was Scott Service's line was he was due. And in that situation, he was hitting the ball hard all night long. He had a line drive that was 105 miles an hour off the bat straight at the second baseman. The double down the line in right field was just 80 miles an hour off the bat. Softest hit ball all night, but that's what they needed at that point. So for me, it was just good to see him get a little bit of success, because I think we were starting to see him wear it a little bit. I think it was starting to get to him. He's, you know, usually a guy that just takes it game to game, but when you've had a season with the bat the way he has, it does begin to pile up. I think he was getting there, and I think that double paired with the RBI single that he had in the first inning on Sunday, you know, hopefully puts him in a little bit of a better place. They need him. They need him to, you know, give them whatever he can give with that bat right now.
Yeah, no question, because again, he's been, you know, fielding so well this year, and you know, he's supposed to be such an important part of that lineup, particularly if he can back successfully in the number five hole. They definitely need that, so that had to be encouraging. And now a series comes up against the San Diego Padres that fortunately a day off today, which is going to be needed, and then of course getting Felix back on the mound.
Yep, and we're always interested to see what he is bringing when he gets up on the mound right now. I hope that we see some, you know, sort of consistency from him. I've been watching him throughout his work week. He does seem to be a little bit into a different routine right now, which is good to see. I've really felt over his last two outings, the last one in particular, afterwards, there was really some acknowledgement of where he's at right now, more so than we've seen from him in the past. Padres, obviously, not a very good team right now. Hopefully he can take advantage and hopefully build on some success there.
Okay, well, Shannon, I guess you can try to take the rest of the day off, but that probably is not going to work out. You probably get a chance to, you know, at least get back together. And, of course, it's great catching up with you and Padres coming up. Shannon Dreher, thanks for joining us.
All right, John, we'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good. And you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will get you up to date with a few of the Seahawks. We'll check up with George Fant and everybody else. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And one of the fun parts about going to all the games, particularly those on the road, you get a chance to catch up with everybody and find out what they're thinking after the game. And, of course, the Seahawks lost 21-20 to the Minnesota Vikings in a game that the first team played pretty well. There was real good blocking. And I think one of the big stories was what to watch was what George Fant was going to be able to do. George Fant moving over after last week having his first game in a year. He moves over from left tackle to right tackle and did a very good job. Let's get the review right now of George Fant. Joining us now is George Fant, and it's like, George, I know last week I was wondering if they were going to make that move and put you on the right side. I knew how difficult it was going to be, but you really did hold up very well. I mean, the times that I was watching your block, you really didn't miss hardly anything.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, less than out there, but I just want to keep getting better week by week, and just, you know, getting close to the season. It's a regular season, so I just want to keep getting better and better.
What felt right?
Once I settled in, I felt fine the whole way around. Just gotta, you know, keep my mind on the game the right way, and I, you know, stay mentally strong and understand all my assignments and everyone else's around.
How did you do that now, looking at a completely different direction, using a different hand that you've never done before?
I'm still fresh in this game to myself. That's how I feel. Missed a year last year. This is year three for me, so in my mind, this is year two. So I'm approaching this like I did my rookie year, coming in at left tackle, never playing it before. I'm approaching it the same way. Just trying to give it my all. I just feel like, this week I just need to, you know, keep honing in on it and keep working on it.
What was tougher, Tuesday, the first day you did it, or Friday, the day now you're in the game?
It was all the same to me. I think the first day I went out there, it was definitely tougher. I really trained at both sides the whole offseason once I started, you know, working on my pass sets and stuff. And then when I got back, I stayed behind Dwayne and stuff for a while, and and, you know, trying to work myself back into the game on the left side. You know, I feel like I kind of lost some of the right stuff. But once I started to get back into it, I was fine.
So, actually, you did some of this in the offseason just in case.
Yeah, just in case. You know, just coming in, working, and, you know, just trying to build my game. Mm-hmm.
What is the toughest thing? Is it the eyes, the hands, or the feet trying to set up?
I think it's trying to sneak your hands at your feet and knowing when to punch and your timing. That's the hardest thing, I think. But it's funny because people say it's like trying to, you know, being right-handed and try right with your left, you know. So it's the technique. You got to bring the technique over from the left to the right. And it's really tough, but, you know, I just want to keep working at it and keep getting better.
What was the things in the technique that you felt really good about?
The things in the technique?
That you felt good about?
I felt like my feet was pretty good. You know, I kind of say that basketball helped me out a lot with that, obviously. So, you know, sliding left, right, trying to get my feet going and, you know, play with my feet and less with my hands, you know, making sure I keep my hands on the defender. So I'm just trying to keep my feet going and sink my hands to my feet and I'll be fine.
You seem to do good in leverage and that and just kind of, you know, being in the right position where you're not out of balance.
Yeah. That's another compliment of basketball. Staying in that base and understanding, you know, your balance from there. So that's been something that's good for me as well.
Compare what you did to what you do in basketball as far as, like, on defense. Because, obviously, I mean, you're trying to make sure you're defending to make sure that the pass rusher doesn't get in. But what type of thing is it comparable to in basketball?
Once again, it's just like playing defense. You know, I try to stay in between. In basketball, I try to stay in between the ball handler and the rim. You know, so I do the same thing in football. So between the defender and the quarterback. So just trying to keep my right angles and force from where I want to go. And that's the biggest thing for me. That goes with my feet. Most of the game to me comes with your feet, and the rest of it is more physical. So you just kind of got to stay in front and stay with the leverage, and you're fine.
Were you nervous?
No. I've put a lot of work in, so I wouldn't say I was nervous. I was really anxious. I think my anxiety got a lot of the best of me today, but something to build on, man. I feel like it's like my first game in the league again, you know. And it's a whole new position, so I'm really ready to go and look at the film and start building from there.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, that's George Fant after the game. And, of course, one of the good parts about the Seahawks is that, you've got veterans who have been around long enough to kind of give you a gauge as to where the line is. I mean, last week we caught up with Dwayne Brown. He gave us an update. You can always check in with Justin Britt. So let's get a state of the offensive line with Justin Britt. Joining us right now is Justin Britt. So you've got three games now into this preseason. How good do you feel about the way the line is blocking?
I'm super excited. We came out here today. We had a quick three and out, which we don't want to have, and then they obviously took up all the first quarter. But our second drive, we went right down the field and scored. And we have so many weapons on offense. The backfield is going to be tough to figure that out. There's so many wide receivers. But just having the same line out there and just being able to gel with them and get the reps and, you know, Jordan Booth stepping in like he does and doing a really good job. And so, you know, camaraderie is there. And, I think we're all excited to get out there. I think it's going to be a really good year offensively. And I think we showcased that through the preseason.
What are the things with this new blocking scheme that seems to work for the talent that's on this offensive line? Because, I mean, you can see there's a lot of good fits.
Yeah. The coaches, they did a really good job through OTAs, through spring and then fall, just getting us ready and prepared. But our schemes are great, and, you know, it really utilizes all of our weapons and tools. And, the backs understand it. And, you know, you have someone like DJ who's come from that kind of system, if you will, from New York with Coach Solari. So, just the attitude that the offensive guys have gone into this offseason with and how excited they are to learn the offense and to go out there and showcase it and to execute. That's the hardest thing, is to go out there and execute. But they've done a really good job. And we've worked really hard this fall camp. And, I don't think that 4-12 is going to be very accurate.
I know the one thing, it seems like he's got a lot more power, and it does set up the running backs so they can really get, you know, the second contact, third contact.
No, like you said, but our backs, are lethal. And you look at Chris Carson, how he ran today, and, you can always trust on Mike to go out there and do his thing. And I think CJ's had a really good preseason in camp. And, you know, we're still excited to get Rashad back and see what he can do. But you can go on and on. I'm excited next week to see how the guys who haven't got the reps they want and see how they go out there next week and perform.
Hey, Justin, thanks.
Thank you.
Justin Britt giving you an update on what he thinks the offensive line is doing. And, yeah, it was the best game for the offensive line. They were able to get the run blocking. It was their best game for pass blocking. All those things came together and, you know, got at least the offense moving in a good direction. Now everybody around the league takes a break. They have the backups that are going to be out there for Thursday. Seattle takes on Oakland. We'll keep you up to date on that. But we're also going to keep you up to date on this. A lot of things going on in the National Football League. As we mentioned a little bit earlier, it was bad news out of Jacksonville. Marquise Lee is out for the season. He got that hit on his knee, so I don't know what type of knee injury it is, but his season is over. Contract negotiations are really starting to pick up. Earlier today, the New England Patriots got Shaq Mason, their powerful guard, to a 5-year, $50 million deal. He gets $10 million a year, and Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network is reporting that Odell Beckham Jr. is getting close to a deal that will make him the highest paid wide receiver in the league. Antonio Brown right now at $17 million is the highest paid. Beckham is going to top that, so it looks like that deal is very close to getting done. Reports out of Los Angeles is that by the end of the week, Aaron Donald is going to get his deal done, and now looks like they are going to give him quarterback-type money. If indeed, if the story is true, he's going to get around $22 million a year. Could be as much as $80 million guaranteed. My guess, that's probably a little overestimate because, again, so many times you hear the guarantees, and that's the one thing that seems to be off because most people put the injury guarantees in that. We go, of course, with the you know, money upon signing that is going to be guaranteed, but that deal looks like it's starting to make progress. No progress on Khalil Mack. I guess there's no surprise there. I don't know if the Raiders do want to pay quarterback-type money for one of the best defensive players and one of the best pass rushers in the league, but Aaron Donald looking like he's close to getting done. And, of course, if you're wondering about the Dallas Cowboys, they're in a mess right now at the safety position. You know, they've got Xavier Woods. He got a separated shoulder. You know, I guess I could keep on Frazier's hurt. I mean, so they're really down two safeties, and one of those two safeties is not going to be there for the opener. You know, Jerron Johnson, and the former Seahawk, ended up signing, and so you know, he may get a chance for playing time. Does this open the door for Earl Thomas? Yeah, probably not. But again, you know, his holdout continues, and we'll see where it goes. Lots of news happening in the National Football League. We'll keep you up to date on that. And of course, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. We're continuing to go around the locker room after the game. Marcus Johnson, I think, has played himself into a roster spot as the fifth or sixth receiver on this team. Mike Davis is fighting to make sure he keeps a job in that backfield, and I think he will. We'll get together with both those players next. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.